Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe we are just about here, and I think we've got all the board members who are going to be here. I do know that one, Terry Train, said she couldn't make it today.
Well, you know, now my computer says 8:30. It's the slowest minute I've seen in a long time. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the September 25 meeting of the Tucson Supplemental Retirement System Board of Trustees. We do have some, we have board members and guests here. We will, we'll be addressing one of the guests after a bit, but I want to go ahead and get our main business going. I was about to ask, Pete to call the roll and, here he is. Okay. Pete, would you please call the roll?
Yes, sir. Sorry, I was stepped out for a moment there.
No problem.
Mark Rubin.
Here.
Dave Zamer.
Here.
Terry Train is absent. Angel Azamelum.
Here.
Tarun Farron.
Here.
John O'Hare.
Here.
Kimberly Swanberg.
Here.
We have six members here. We got a quorum, sir.
Okay. Let's entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I motion to approve the consent agenda.
Tarun, thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, please call the vote.
All right, Kim Swanberg.
Yes.
John O'Hare.
Here.
Tarun Farron.
Aye.
Michelle.
Yes.
Dave.
Aye.
And Mark.
Aye. Thank you.
6-0.
All right. Our first and primary business for the day is the review of the funding policy. We have Dana Wolfrey here. Dana, can you take it away?
Yes. Let me see if I can get set up here. Share my screen. All right. Are you seeing it?
Yes.
Very good. All right. So good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all again. When we met the last time, we did sort of an actuarial refresher or 101. And we said that that was to get you ready for some funding policy discussion. And so, as promised, today we're going to get into that funding policy discussion. Christy is going to take you through some funding policy fundamentals, and then I will get into the specifics of your actual policy and why we want to make some changes to that policy and what those changes might entail. So I will turn it over to Christy.
All right. Thank you, Dana. So we're going to start out just on our slide one here of really what is the funding policy, what's our purpose behind it, and in short, it's really going to dictate or monitor that timing of your contributions. It's going to determine what contributions you're putting into the plan and give us a general framework for how those contributions are going to fund the plan over time. Now, how we set that framework is through general objectives. So we have on our next slide here, what are those objectives that are going to help us set what those contributions we want to be putting into the plan are and how that time period is going to be adjusted in order to meet our objectives. So our first and probably foremost objective to this funding policy is that we are funding the plan to ensure that all future benefits will be available to be paid to your members when they come due. Along with that, our next objective is to make sure that we actually have a stable contributions over the lifetime of this funding policy. So as we know, a city is beholden to a budget, which also dictates many other funding things in your city. So you want to make sure that the city can expect stability in those contributions that they're putting into your plan over time. And on top of that, your employees appreciate knowing what contributions they'll be putting in so that for their own financial planning and needs, they have stability over time as well. Then we want to consider this intergenerational equity. And that's to say, if we put off funding the plan now, those benefits are still going to be due to your members. Those aren't going away. You still need to make sure that once those promised benefits are due, you can pay for them. So if we were to put off some of that funding now and putting it on that future generation, you're just adding that burden down the line, and that really doesn't create equity across your membership or to the city. Additionally, we want to put in some margin for adverse experience. Unfortunately, we are not fortune tellers. We do not know exactly what the future will hold. And as we've all experienced over time, sometimes things don't work out as planned and we hit some rough spots. So it's really important that there is some margin in that funding policy to put away for, say, that rainy day. However, as we look at these objectives, we know that oftentimes they can be competing. So in order to help us with that, we have this set funding policy that will ensure that all of these objectives are being met, and that we're not focusing on one of these objectives over another, and really putting the plan in a good position moving forward. So that brings us to your actual funding policy and how does it function? I'm really only going to briefly say here, there are a lot of little subtleties to your funding policy. I would highly recommend, and Dana would highly recommend, it's, I think, about an 8-page document. So making sure that you all, as the board members who are setting this funding policy and upholding this funding policy, making sure you take a moment to read through it and make sure you understand many of those subtleties. However, for our discussions today, we're kind of going to give the broad overview of how this covers your contributions. So in your funding policy.
Just real quick.
Oh, sorry.
Pete did include that funding policy in your board materials. So if you're looking for it, I think it's right after this presentation.
Thank you, Dana. Yes. So again, we would recommend if you haven't, I'm sure many of you have, but if you haven't, just take a moment to look over it. But in the meantime, just for the purposes of today's discussion, we wanted to give you that broad overview, which is going to be in terms of the contributions that are set in this funding policy and by city code. We set out to have the employee plus the employer contributions covering the actuarial determined contribution rate, which is something that is determined in our actuarial funding valuation each and every year. And it's made up of three parts. So if we all remember from our last presentation, we have that normal cost, which is that cost of accruing benefit each year. And then we have the amortization of the unfunded liability. So that's basically our mortgage payment paying down that unfunded liability in each year. So that's those liabilities, that unfunded liability that was created in the past that now we want to pay off in a methodical process for you all. That's going to be our 20-year layered amortization basis year over year. And then additionally, we do add in the administrative expenses for your plan. So these are going to be a recurring expenses to the plan that we want to make sure we are funding for over the longevity of the plan. So those three pieces are going to make up this actuarial determined contribution rate that is by city code mandated, that is going to be covered by both those employee and employer contributions. Additionally, we are subject to some rounding and minimums for this funding policy on how these contributions are paid. And we're going to cover that a little bit on this next slide as we talk a little more specifically about exactly how those contributions are split up between the employee and the city. So for the employee, we really have, I'm going to consider it three tiers of benefits that are paying slightly different contribution rates. So we have our first group of the tier one grandfathered members who are those hired before July 1, 2006. They will be paying a 5% contribution rate. That is a flat rate. Theirs does not change. Then we go on to our Tier 1 members who were hired after that July 1, 2006 date, as well as our Tier 2 members. And they are both paying at a variable rate, which is going to be half the normal cost rate. And then this is where we are subject to that rounding up to the nearest quarter percent for the employees. As of our last valuation and maintained again, I believe, this year, those rates, so again, it's that flat 5% rate for the grandfathered, and then our Tier 1 non-grandfathered members, their half normal cost rate, rounded up to the nearest quarter percent is 7.75%. And then that Tier 2, rounded up to that nearest quarter percent, is going to be a 6% contribution rate for those members. Now, what's expected from the city is to pay a rate that is the actuarial determined contribution rate less that employee rate. As of our last valuation, that was about 20%. We do expect that to be a little bit less this year, but about 20% is going to be what the city, by city code, is required to contribute in order to meet that actual determined contribution rate. That is subject to rounding up to that nearest half a percent. Now, in the city's plans funding policy, the board recommended that the city contribute at least 27.5% until the plan is fully funded. Now, this expectation of receiving the 27.5% is primarily what was driving our expectation of full funding in, we say, 2034, 2035. That was dependent on whether we were measuring it with the actuarial value of assets or our market value of assets. We do expect to see a little bit improvement on this expectation in the coming year as well, but generally, the 27.5% is driving that expectation. However, what we really want to highlight here and what's going to be a bit of a cornerstone of this conversation today is that this 27.5% is not enforced by city code. Only that approximately 20% to meet that actual determined contribution rate is what's enforced by your city code. This 27.5% is a recommendation in your funding policy. So once this plan is fully funded, we're expecting to no longer contribute that 27.5%, and all that will be expected to be paid, since we're fully funded, we'll no longer have that unfunded liability. We get rid of that amortization piece in that actual determined contribution rate, and the expectation is to be paying the normal cost plus administration expenses between the employee and employer. So with that, I'm going to pass it to Dana to discuss a little bit more about what that means for the plan and how that looks moving forward.
I want to ask a quick question. What is the amount of money that equals the 27.5% roughly in current times?
Give me a moment. That's a great question. So we have so if we're going based on last year's, we're talking about I want to make sure I have this correct. Let's see. Yeah, it's about $50 million, and that remained about flat, $49 million.
So just to put a monetary frame around this, if when the plan is fully funded, the city will be paying roughly a quarter of what it's paying now, if we say that the half of the normal cost plus admin is 6-7% in very round numbers. Is that a fair assumption?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So just so everybody can kind of appreciate the numbers, when we get the fully funding, the city's got in today's dollars, something a little less maybe than $40 million of additional money available for either lower taxes or other uses. Is that fair?
One thing that we are going to point out is that you will be back in the world of actuarial volatility at that point, because there's not really a plan once you get to fully funded if you become unfunded again. I mean, okay. You would still have to pay normal cost plus amortization like you do now, but you wouldn't have this nice flat rate that lives well above the actuarial contribution. So you have a 6-7% expectation, but you're going to be bumping around as you have actual experience coming in. So you're going to be back in that world of actuarial volatility, which this current policy was designed to avoid for a very long time. And so, you know, like a funding policy is not meant to last you 30 years. So I'm sure whoever designed this funding policy originally thought, well, when we get there, you know, we'll get there when we get there, and we'll deal with the problems of being fully funded then. Like, we don't need to address that now, 25 years out, you know.
Nice set of problems to have to deal with.
Yes, yes. But okay. So, I mean, that is one of the things that we want to point out with today's presentation is that the expectation is 6 or 7%, but because you can have an unfunded liability develop if you have some adverse experience, that rate is not guaranteed, and it's going to bounce around. So
understood. Percentages are interesting until you translate them to dollars. They don't always mean a ton. If that's generated any questions or comments, let's get them. Otherwise, let's move on to the rest of what you've got to share with us.
Sounds good.
One question that I think is going to lead into what we're going to talk about. What's our annual admin cost for the?
So it did decrease a little bit year over year this year. But if I'm looking at what we currently have, your admin expenses last year were about $900,000. This year they're about $640,000. So if we're talking about then putting that back into what is that as the percentage of our actual determined contribution rate, last year it was about 0.5%. This year it's just over 0.3% as a percentage of pay.
Okay, thank you.
Almost insignificant, but not quite. It's a very small number. Take it away.
All right. So, you know, we've got the city putting in this very meaningful contribution, the 27.5. You're expected to be fully funded in a decade. And so what's wrong with that? And the answer is almost nothing. So from a funding perspective, it's an incredibly strong policy. As a fiduciary, you should feel very good about it. The problem, which most plans would love to have this problem compared to the problems that they actually do have, is simply the cash flow pattern and the way that those cash flow needs, those demands, mess with your potential liquidity of your asset allocation. And so, you know, if it's not immediately apparent what I'm talking about with that, don't worry. We're going to talk through all of these cash flow and liquidity ideas some more on these next slides. All right. So, Christy talked a little bit about how that 27.5% city contribution rate was not enforced by the city code. The city does continue to contribute at that level at the board's request, but they're not legally obligated to. They're only obligated to put in the actuarially determined contribution that comes out of the valuation. And so what we're looking at here is some projected funded ratios and projected contribution rates under two scenarios. So the first one is the blue scenario, and that assumes that they continue to contribute the 27.5%. So if we look at the funded ratio, which is that solid blue line, we see that we pretty quickly approach full funding or 100% in 2034. So again, these are still based on last year's results. New info next month. And then the blue dotted line is our contributions, and that starts at 27.5%, and it's 27.5% each year. But then when the plan becomes fully funded, that contribution rate drops out of the sky and down to that 1/2 normal cost plus admin expenses, which we talked about is about 6 or 7% of pay. So then we look at the second scenario, which is the red scenario, and we say, what if the city just contributes the actuarial contribution? They ignore the board's request for that 27.5%. They just put in what they're legally obligated to. And we see that the funded ratio still trends up to fully funded. It takes a little bit longer, about 20 years, but it gets there. And then the city sees immediate relief in the contribution rate, so coming down quite a bit from that 27.5%. You can see that initial gap there. And then we do have that smaller cliff later when they get to full funding, and it drops down to that ultimate 6 or 7%. And so, again, from a funding perspective, either is okay. As a fiduciary, you'd probably rather see this stronger push for full funding in blue, but there's nothing terribly wrong with that red line either.
And there's nothing that prevents a somewhere in between those two.
Yes, there is nothing, and we're going to consider it.
Okay. Sorry for stepping on your message.
Okay. All right. So this is what's wrong with both the red and the blue line, and it's cash flow. So every year, this plan does what it was intended to do, which is pay benefits. And so in terms of our liquidity, we have to have enough to be able to pay our net cash flows. So net cash flows is contributions less benefit payments. And so right now, this plan takes about 3% of its assets each year to pay for those net cash flows. And that is absolutely okay. That is what is supposed to happen. This is a mature plan. And when you pre-fund benefits, eventually you expect to be able to take something out of assets to pay for benefits. But we don't want to have to take out a lot more than that in a year. And we don't want that number to be terribly volatile. It's very hard on Craig. And in turn, it's hard on all of you and your asset allocations available to you. You need to have more liquidity. So if we look at what happens on our blue line, which is our 27.5% scenario, we see that the net cash flows become slightly less negative for a while, which is great. But then in 2034, when we become fully funded and we drop to that 6 or 7% contribution rate, we go down to a negative 5.3% cash flow. We have to take 5% of assets out each year. And so you need a ton more liquidity in 2035 than you did in 2034. And so now looking at the blue line, what happens if looking at the red line now. So what if the city drops to the actuarial rate? You see there's some immediate pain right away if we go down from something that's 27.5 to something that's 20. And so we go from about a negative 3 down to a negative 4.5 that we need liquidity for. And then we see that improvement over time. And again, when we get to full funding, we drop out of the sky again. All right. So instead of falling out of the sky, let's go ahead and be proactive and land the plane. So this is an idea we put forth a while ago, and we're going to call it glide pathing. That often gets used in investments, but we're going to use it for contributions today. And so what we're going to do is each valuation, we're going to compare the current contribution rate, which would be right now our 27.5 that the city's putting in, to the city's actuarial contribution, which we saw was about 20%. And if the current rate, the 27.5, is at least 6% more than the actuarial rate, we're going to bring it down 1%. And so, you know, if we're at 27.5 and we've got 20, that's a 7.5% difference. So that's enough. That's more than our 6. And so we would say for the next fiscal year, city, go ahead and bring it down to 26.5. And then we'd go and we'd do the next valuation and we'd say, how does 26.5 compare to the actuarially determined contribution? Is it at least 6% different? Bring it down another 1% down to 25.5. And so we're always checking that there's at least, that we're always at least 6% more and then bringing it down 1. And so we're always going to maintain at least a 5% buffer there. And that importantly includes after we reach full funding. So the primary thing that that buffer does is maintain contribution stability for the city. And then the second thing that it could do, maybe not a discussion for today, this is thinking very long term, but ultimately if the plan is doing very well down the line, it could be used to fund a small COLA. All right. So the main thing that this glide pathing is going to do is smooth out our cash flow needs. It's going to provide predictable contribution patterns for the city in most scenarios. So the only instance where that would not hold true would be some sort of extremely adverse investment experience, you know, another minus 30% like 2008. But that would be true of any of these funding approaches. None of these funding approaches would prevent some sort of contribution volatility if we have another 2008. So with this policy, the contribution rate isn't bouncing all over the place because our rate lives well above our actuarial rate. So year-to-year experience doesn't have a large impact on city requirements. It really takes an extreme event for that actuarial rate to be a factor. All right. Whoa. All right. So I know we had a lot going on the first time that we looked at this slide, and now we're going to add in this glide path policy. With our green lines here, we got a lot going on. But you can see in terms of the time to full funding in green, it's going to be a bit of a compromise between the red and the blue, just like Mark said. And so that makes sense, right? So if we're putting in less than the 27.5, but more than the actuarial rate, we're going to be somewhere in between. And then if we look at the dotted line, we can see this nice sort of landing of the plane on the contributions, no dropping out of the sky, lowering the contribution rate 1% a year. Occasionally we hit that 6% threshold and we don't drop down for a year, before we drop down again the next year. But again, not contributing the bare minimum is going to be really important to this policy. It's going to avoid bouncing around in those out years, the, you know, 2044 and 2049. In those years, we're not going to have a bunch of volatility and be back in that world of just putting in the actuarial rate every year and just seeing what it is, not having any surprise or having surprises every year, waiting to see what that rate is. All right. So this is probably the main takeaway. If we look at these cash flow patterns, the green line, the glide path provision has really taken all of the chaos out of it. We don't reach any extreme negatives. So we don't ever reach a point where we're taking out a lot of our assets at once. And we have almost no volatility. And so this year is really the primary reason for this recommendation today is to get the smoothness of these cash flows. All right. So just to recap.
Dana, yes. Dana, can I ask you about slide 13? So back two slides from here.
Sure.
So as I look at the green path and I look at the city contributions and I look at the funding, what I'm seeing is this policy would in perpetuity set the city contribution approximately 1.8 to 2 times their required contribution rate. The numbers don't matter. Just the red, 6%. The red and blue come together at about 6. The green is about 6% higher than that.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, see, that's like taking out all the volatility of it. So there would be instances where, so say you're going along and your actuarially determined contribution rate is the normal cost. You're like 100% funded. And then all of a sudden you have a bad investment loss, or maybe just a moderate one. And all of a sudden you have an unfunded liability. You have to pay it off over 20 years. And say it jumps up to 9%. Because we've got 6% for normal costs and 3% for amortization. This funding policy in green wouldn't move. It would say we just don't drop it. So it would say you're at 11 or 12%, whatever you ultimately got to. That's still enough to pay your actuarial contribution, your 9% that you have to. So we don't need to go up. We just need to not go down.
Okay. And I appreciate your comments earlier about how when the 27.5 policy was put in place, this, how do we get off that, how do we get off that pattern? The people who put that in place didn't have to solve that problem on that day.
Sure.
But just so I'm not suggesting that the board has to, solve a 2045 problem today, if that even is a problem.
Right, sure.
You're identifying that it's not a problem, and it's a good thing for the fiduciary, and it provides consistency and stability for the city as a funder. Just noting that that is a request for a commitment that is going to be above the requirement and sort of in perpetuity, right? As we draft it today, as we consider it today.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, has the effect on the solid green line of going up.
Yep. Yeah, so I would say, in general, if your funding policy lasts 5 or maybe even 10 years without amendment, then you've done great. You expect to revisit your funding policy. But at the same time, not knowing what's going to happen in the future, it's still my duty to think about what will happen 20 and 25 years from now and set something in place where, you know, if nobody did touch it, I expect that it's still going to work out, you know?
Yes.
So right. Thank you. I see another question there.
Yeah, quick question on this. So right now the red is what they're obligated to do, right? And the blue is what they've been voluntarily doing.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to modify the funding policy, would the green become mandatory?
It would not.
It would not.
So the red is still the mandatory.
Okay.
But like when we first started talking about this policy, part of it was saying if we put this policy in place and we give the city some relief, then maybe we run less of a risk that the city's going to reach out and take the red instead of the blue.
Right.
If we're thinking about them and saying, all right, this is a thing that we can do together to give you some relief, but still be good fiduciaries to the plan, then this is a good thing.
Kimberly? Do you have your hand up?
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions. First of all, has anybody asked us to look at this, like from a leadership level, like council or leadership, or is this just on our own?
This is Cassie. Just for historic context, when the 27.5% recommendation was first made to the city, it was with the understanding that if everything went well, this subsequent conversation would come. So, you know, way back then, we explained to the city that the board is proactively managing these glide path issues. And so I don't know if there's been a recent request for a review, but I know that the understanding when we asked the city to start contributing well above the red line was that there was a goal in mind. And as we got closer, we would come back with alternatives. So I think that was always part of the expectation. I don't know if there's been a recent conversation about it.
And the likelihood that people are still around to remember what happened then is probably not high, but it does seem like implicit in asking for something well above what the code provides for is the understanding that at some point that will end or change in some fashion. It's not indefinite. So, Kimberly, do you have another question?
Yeah, I just have a couple of questions, if you don't mind. I was just curious if we know when the city code was established. Was that long ago or, I mean, probably, right? I mean, you know, because I'm sure the city, you know, it's like anything. And everybody would really want a fully funded plan versus what might be in city code, you know, a couple of decades ago. Just a comment. You know, I'm just curious. I want to go look it up in the city code. No one has to respond. I can look that up. And then, let's see. On slide 14, if you wouldn't mind going to that slide, what is the main driver between the green and the blue lines? The blue is with the 27.5, right? And then the green is with this.
Dropping down path. Like 26.5, 25.5, 24.5. So we do have to draw a little bit more in cash flow as we drop that contribution compared to the blue.
But yeah, I was more looking at 2044. Like, what's the main point, the main driver?
It's that the same 5%, direction. It's that 5% buffer. So the reason that the green line lives above the blue and the red lines is that we are putting in 11 or 12 instead of 6 or 7. So here, like in the blue and the red, we're putting in the bare minimum to keep the plan 100% funded. And in the green, we're putting in some more to say, let's make sure our contributions are stable and let's make sure we stay 100% funded. So let's put in a little bit extra. So the amount that we have to draw in cash flow is less because the contributions are coming in are more.
Okay, thank you. I'm not sure I totally understand this blue and the green lines, but you know, it just seems like when we talked a little bit last meeting about this, I remember asking some questions about this, and no one said at that time that we were even, you know, it seemed like it was a solid, you know, we felt comfortable with the way it was going, and no one said that we, you know, the next meeting we're going to be looking at alternatives. So I would just, like, I felt really good going out of the last meeting, you know, considering the board, you know, has this strong desire to be fully funded. And now, you know, it seems like we, you know, we're looking at, I mean, I know the city does, you know, we do have some issues with cash flow, but I don't know. It seemed so solid at the last meeting, and now it seems like we're like stepping a couple steps back. That's how I feel.
All right. And so I absolutely want to address that. I'm glad you said something. So, like, how we left the last meeting is how we feel. You are doing great. You're headed in the right direction. The funding policy from a funding perspective is absolutely rock solid. As a fiduciary, fantastic. So don't let anything that I say dispel you of that. What we're talking about here is like not anything like not having enough assets to pay benefits. It's saying, you know, we can only put so much in private equity, or we can only put so much in bonds because we can't pull it immediately out to pay benefits. So if we are going to drop down all of a sudden to a minus 5% need for liquidity, then we might need to have, you know, 5% of our assets in cash, not earning as much as we would like. Craig would be better to speak to this. But that is what we're talking about here. Like in terms of cash flow, it's not like we don't have enough money to pay benefits. We absolutely have plenty of money to pay benefits. We're not in any risk of insolvency, anything like that. This is an administrative issue, and we can earn better investment returns if we don't have constraints like this on our liquidity. So, like I said, other plans would love to have this sort of administrative issue. It's not a huge deal, but if we can do better, why not do better? So,
And just so you have a little bit of perspective, Kimberly, this is an issue that I remember hearing about. I'm now wrapping up my 7th year on the board. I can't believe it. 7 years. And I remember hearing this issue in the first couple of years as something that was coming. I also want to assure everybody, we're not going to vote on this today. This is an issue that has broad significance, despite the fact that, as Dana says, it is ultimately an administrative issue. But it has some broad implications, largely in terms of our partnership with the city council. And we're not going to put something on the board on something of this magnitude and expect to vote in the next 20 minutes. So this is informational questions, and it's not something we have to decide in the next. We certainly need to decide it today, and we don't need to decide it in the next month or two. But it's a discussion that is appropriate to be having it leading toward a decision in the not super distant future. Is that fair, Dana?
Yeah. I mean, I would say you don't have to rush it too much, but I would maybe encourage you to think about making a decision early enough that it can be relevant to the fiscal year 2027 decision. So that would be the rate starting July 1, 2026. So, I mean, so that's
eight, nine months from now, which means ideally we're making a decision in the next 2 or 3 months, which leaves plenty of time to deal with budgeting. Is that timetable make sense?
Sure.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
And I mean, we can choose how to communicate it. I think, you know, if things are in the works, Cassie, you can let me know how you feel about this. I don't know if we need to have officially adopted the full funding policy to communicate some of this to the city. Like, is there any room to communicate it before it's signed and delivered, or does it need to be I's dotted and T's crossed?
I think it could be communicated, and I think that would be consistent with this cooperation that the chairman's talking about between the board and the city. I think it, you know, if the board gets to the point where we likely know what the funding policy is going to be, it would make sense to talk to the city about that before it's formally adopted.
Okay. Dave, Craig, and then Carlton. Dave?
I think Dana's explanation actually answered my question. I was just curious that cash flow crunch in 2034, the main impact, since we have plenty of assets, is just, as you said, it would be on our investment policy. And then worst case, we wouldn't want to be having to sell assets in, say, a down market if there was a really bad market that year.
Exactly.
There are intents to smooth things out and make it a orderly process as it is, as it would be.
Yes, excellent point.
Okay.
Yeah, so since I was on, I thought I would address the liquidity question that Dana had asked. So right now, your allocation is roughly 17% of more illiquid assets, so 12% in the private real estate, and then the 5% in infrastructure. So that leaves, 83% of the rest of the portfolio, which is going to be very liquid. I think to the point that Dave just made, we do try and avoid, selling in down markets when we can in inopportune times. But the goal of the portfolio is to minimize the amount of cash that is available. So things do remain fully invested until you need to pull them. And I know Pete and Arpa Forum have done a good job managing that when they need to take cash. But certainly the less pressure you put on the investment program to, maybe have to sell it in opportune times, I think the better.
So I was thinking that maybe there's an alternative approach we could take to this that could still meet the same objectives of smoothing that doesn't necessarily push out our actuarially funded position, but could still offer some relief. So if we set in our policy that, hey, we want to be fully funded from an actuarial 100% standpoint in 2034, as we're currently targeted to do, but if investments, perform better than that, that the city has an opportunity to reduce their contribution as long as they're not pushing back that 100% actuarial investment in 2034, right? Because we're performing better than we expected. And if we give the city a recommended maximum annual decrease to their contribution rate, right? So if we say, until we're fully funded, we recommend that you do not decrease in a single year more than 3% or something like that, right? And then once we're fully funded, we can have, that could be kind of a domain shift where now we're looking more into how do we maintain that long-term buffer against volatility. And I don't know if that, instead of saying, okay, let's be 100% funded, we're 120% funded or whatever it may look like. But we still recommend that they don't decrease the city contribution by more than a set percent per year. But that may give the city a little bit more flexibility without kind of compromising on the good progress we've been making on being fully funded, and might be kind of a balance. The last thing I wanted to mention, or maybe I'll bring it up as a separate topic. Yeah.
We can definitely give that some thought. I think unless you did do something like target something more than 100%, I think with the option that you're talking about, it would be hard to avoid the falling out of the sky when you got to 100%, because like you're with targeting the full funding date, you're saying we have to get to 100% on this date. And then the year after, it's going to be something close to the 27.5.
Well, if we said in the policy that the city, we recommend that the city do not drop their contribution rate by more than, say, 3% per year, even after we're fully funded, then, yeah, it'll be a drop, but it won't be, from 27 to 6, right? It'll be more of a steadier drop even after we're fully funded is kind of what I'm thinking. And that 3% is just thrown out there. It could be 5, could be whatever the actuarial recommendation for smoothing may be.
Yeah, you could do something like that. I mean, it wouldn't be enforceable.
Correct, right.
So, you'd be at your 27.5, and then you'd be like, city, please give us 24.5, but the city could give you 6. So
it's at the same level of enforceability as a glide path, though. That was the other thing I was thinking about is, at what point would it be wise to talk to the city about changing the city code to build in a little bit more protection against that huge drop all at once? Or is that something that is feasible? Kind of to Kimberly's point of, you know, if there's an issue with the city code itself, is that something we can bring up and discuss with them to avoid a bad situation?
We certainly, from my perspective, we can discuss changes to the city code. And when the funding policy, I put in the chat that the current code rules were written in 2009. Things were a lot different then in terms of the funded status and the concerns that the board had for the plan. And the funding policy was adopted after that. And the idea moving forward was that when we can continue this cooperative relationship with the city in terms of them following the board's recommendation for the city's contributions, there was no reason to push the city to put themselves in a legal position of additional required contributions. So, you know, there's always a balance here between, you know, asking the city to commit in the code to funding more than is actuarially required. And so the board over the years has chosen to maintain this cooperative relationship, and it has worked to this point. Obviously, things can change in the future, and we can look at code provisions that would lock in, if you will, this trajectory towards full funding. But I think if I was wearing my hat of talking to the city, that's a big ask from the city's perspective to commit funds that are not actuarially required, to commit those funds to the city, to the plan, when there's so many other demands for those funds. So I think that would be a very involved discussion, and I think we'd have to have some really strong reasons to need those additional code provisions. And history has shown us that the city has been following the board's recommendations without those code provisions.
It's a really good way to piss off a partner, forgive me.
That's another way to say it. Yeah.
We don't trust you anymore, so we're going to fork you to agree to do what we want you to do. Angela.
Yes, thank you so much. Good morning, everybody. Dana, could you take us back to slide 11 and walk us again through the landing provisions that you offered earlier? Because to me, I believe if we get a clear understanding of where you leading us, then I believe it is a little easier, at least for me, for me to make, let me not speak for everyone, for me to better understand the last slide that was on the board, and help us, or help me, let me not speak for everyone again, help me come to a conclusion on what would be best, for the city and also for the fund. Thanks.
Okay. Here, you know what? Actually, I wonder, let's see. Let me actually stop sharing this. No, wait. Escape. Let me just pull up an Excel.
And I wanted to ask whether you had a chart, but.
I don't have a chart, but I'm going to just put in some sample numbers.
Got
and see if
Thank
we can
you.
Walk through it that way.
Actually. Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. So right now you're at 27.5. Can you see that, or do I need to make it bigger? Okay. And your last valuation said that the city needed to pay at least 19.97. And so my difference is 7.53. And so I'm going to say decrease. This year, yes. Right? Because there's enough of a gap between these two that I'm like, hey, I'm putting in a bunch, or the city's putting in a bunch of extra. I don't want to put in 27.5% of pay if you guys don't mind. All right. So next year, it would be at 26.5. And let's say the valuation comes in at 19.5. All right, we're down to 7. Still yes. Let's say, so then we go down to 25.5. Let's say the next year we have some bad experience. Investments don't perform very well. Our rate comes in at 22. Well, now I've only got 3.5% margin, and so I'm going to say, no, we don't decrease. We're going to stay at 25.5 again. And now, well, we had some recovery in our assets, so we came down to 20. Still not quite there, 5.5. Still no. So we're going to do another year of 25.5. I'm going to do one last one, and then I'll stop bothering you with all this. I'm going to come in back at my, like, 19 kind of region. All right, now I finally got enough buffer between my actual and my actuarial, so I'm going to bring it down to 24.5 the next year. Does that help at all?
Yes, that was my understanding. I just wanted kind of put it a little more clearer to all of us, so it makes it a little easier for us to understand the charts that were presented.
It's very fair.
Thank you.
All right. Dana, Christy, do you have more information to provide us at this point?
I have one last quick bombshell to throw at you. I just want to leave you with one more question. So it's not in the materials because I put this together before I realized that the city had once again not put in the employee contribution increases that were part of the board funding policy. So while we're in the funding policy, making some changes, I would put it to the board the question of, do you want to continue that policy of 1/2 normal cost for employee contributions? Because, you know, the city has definitely dragged their feet in terms of actually following that policy. It doesn't make a huge difference to the plan in terms of funding trajectory. You know, the commitment from the city and making this rate in the, you know, high 20s is much more important than the 25 or 50 basis points, the 0.25% or 50.5% that the employees might contribute to meet this policy. Would you rather fix the employee contribution rates at what they are now? So don't have to do it. But while we're here looking at the policy, do you still like the 1/2 normal cost? You know, you could leave them where they are so that they still are sort of reflecting their tier of benefits, the fact that the tier one, variable rate people get more benefits than the tier two people. So, you know, they're still contributing relative to their benefits, but do you want to leave that question in there? You know, if we change assumptions because of an experience study, do you want the employee rate to change? That kind of thing. Or do you want to just leave fixed employee contribution rates since the city seems to be tending that way anyway? So.
Dana, just so I understand, if we did something different on the employee contribution rate other than the rounding, that would be a code change. So that wouldn't be within the board's control. We can make a recommendation on that.
Oh, the 1/2 normal cost is in the code?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the rounding, all right. The rounding is a policy issue.
Okay. All right. Well, that changes the perspective a little bit, but I mean, you still, if as a board you don't love the 1/2 normal cost, you could still make a code change recommendation. So,
yes, that's what it would be, though.
All right, and now I finished all my comments now. No more bombshells.
Okay. All right. We're not going to have a vote today on this. I'm just trying to think through. Oh, I'm sorry, Angel. Did you have another question?
No, not another question, just a comment.
Okay, your
I believe while I often say that the city of Tucson is the most employee-centric organization I have ever worked with, I would say that any change to the employee contribution, particularly if it is an increase, needs to be communicated very early in the game to the city. So we do not have to backpedal on what we're communicating to mayor and council.
Cassie, I want to be sure that when we do have a vote, we have a motion that is very clear about what we are and are not approving. And I'm just thinking it may be that we ought to have something written and distributed before the meeting as opposed to what we typically do and what boards routinely do, which is somebody makes a motion. And if we need to fine tune it a bit, we do that in minutes. Clearly there are people with issues and concerns here, and I want to be sure that we are clear about what we're doing or not doing, frankly. So is that something that you would have time to maybe work on before the next meeting?
Yeah, and I think that that's a good point. And in the past, when we've made changes, we've worked through actual language in the funding policy before there was a formal action by the board. So is that what we want to see? Do you want me to work with Dana to do a revision to the funding policy that can be reviewed at the next meeting?
Yeah, I think I'd like that. And perhaps we can add this as a discussion item for the retreat if it's not already on the agenda, with the notion that we would have a vote in November. Although I know November gets a little tricky for meetings because we're the fourth Thursday of the month, and so is another particularly special day in November. Makes it a little complicated. But anyway, let's work on that. Is there anything else anybody needs to share today on this issue before we move on to other items? Sounds like not. Okay. Did I hear something?
Yeah, sorry, I can't put my hand up.
That's very okay. Well
in the Teams. I was just wondering, as shown on the screen here, if we have a number of adverse years, could we end up in a situation where we kind of converge with the actuarial minimum and where the city is currently paying? Like, would we want to have in the policy at least like a minimum above the minimum percent above the actuarial need? So, like, let's say the city was down to 20 and, you know, there was a really bad year and they got bumped back up to 20 as their minimum. We're kind of flatlined at that point, right? It'd be harder for them to get ahead again. I know it's not the super likeliest because we're 6%, you know, consistently on other years, but I just wanted to kind of build into the policy maybe a way to step back up if needed.
Well, and if I understand Dana's outline of the glide path, it has a 5% buffer in it above the actuarial requirement.
So, yeah, I mean, it would have to be extreme experience to breach what your current rate is. In normal years of experience, you would likely have some sort of ongoing buffer. It's just a matter of how much. I'm trying to think about if you put in some sort of must be at least the actuarial rate plus some amount, then you would potentially build in more volatility, because when you have that extreme incident and say this 19 goes to a 26. Well, now the city has to go to 26 and you're saying they have to go to 29. So they just increased by 4.5% of pay because you're saying you want more than the actuarial contribution. And so that could be potentially fairly onerous.
Yeah, that would be problematic. I wonder though, if if they end up at that actuarial level, like, would they be kind of stuck at the actuarial level for a long time? Like, would we kind of lose ground? I know it's kind of extreme. We don't have to talk about it at depth right now, too, but it's just
let me toss out one other thing for people to mull over the next month. The city code requires a contribution that is equal to the Dana, what's the term I'm drawing a blank?
Really determined contribution.
Okay. You know, there are a whole lot of things that government is required to do. And all you got to do is turn on the news and find out that there are a whole lot of things that some governments don't do, even though they are required to do that. Mm-hmm. And there's not a whole lot of remedy at that point necessarily. You know, there's nothing that I'm aware of in the city code that places the contribution to the retirement plan ahead of maintaining the streets, making sure that there's security at City Hall, et cetera. So, you know, we're dealing with a situation that is at all times somewhat fluid, and I think we need to remember that adding requirements only goes so far in this world. And I say that as somebody who lives in a world full of requirements, and finds that very often they don't mean very much at the end of the day. So let's just keep all of that in mind, as we go through, this, but we'll take this up at the retreat. And you know, if we're in a position to vote at that time and we've got time, great. If not, we will get something decided by the November meeting, one way or another. Okay. Dana, have I stepped all over your timing?
No, absolutely not.
No, okay, very good. Next item on the agenda, staffing update. Pete, do you want to fill us in on the news?
All right, thank you. I will be stepping down from the city. I have taken a job with the town of Marana. So we do have a transition plan in place to make sure that the board is well taken care of. The transition plan is sitting next to me. Her name is Lisa Lopez.
Pete, 1 second. Dana, can you take your spreadsheet down?
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I struggle with these things.
It takes up most of the screen.
I got to figure out how to stop sharing. There we go.
All right, thank you. Now we can see people.
So again, this is yes. Lisa Lopez. Now maybe she's large, the window is large enough to see her. Lisa has been with the city for between 25 and 30 years. So she understands the city very well. She has been in finance, and she's been a finance manager. She has been finance manager for investments for the city for a number of years. So she's got great experience as an institutional investor. She's been doing active board support and taking care of public-facing boards for years. So she understands the responsibilities and roles related to that. And so she's going to be a great replacement for me and good support for TSRS. I am very confident that you guys are in great hands and things will go smoothly. We've been working together now for weeks to make sure that none of the little items that are being juggled in the background get dropped, lost, or even put on a back burner. So you might have questions about things which have come up, such as, hey, don't we have some code changes? Yes, the code changes are going through. They have been delivered to the point of contact who puts them into the agenda for mayor and council. And you'll remember we talked about that previously. We have a summary of stuff that we've been working on for many months, and it's now in queue to get reviewed. We also have our real estate subscriptions. So we are buying into the new real estate investments, the new managers. Both of those will be complete in the first week of October. I'm sorry, October 1 and October 9. So not quite the first week, the early part of October. So we've got that transition happening. And we have our setup for the board retreat all ready to go. So you guys really are in good hands. This should be pretty smooth and seamless from your perspective. I've really enjoyed working with you. I appreciate the opportunities to be here and be at the table and learn from each of you, in particular Dana, Cassie, and Craig. You guys have been great, very informative, and really a good help for the board. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Congratulations, Pete.
Yes, congratulations, and welcome, Lisa. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, welcome. We look forward to working with you.
Working with all of you.
Yeah.
And Pete, when are you exiting?
My last day is next week, October 2nd.
Well, I told Pete the other day, but he has been just so wonderful to work with, and I'm going to miss him so much. I think when he told me, I was like, oh. And then, yeah, So anyway, I do welcome you, Lisa, absolutely. But Pete has just been so wonderful, so I will really miss him.
I'll miss him too.
Well, I'm one of the crazy ones. I really do enjoy actuarial information.
All right. Next item, the update on the climate action plan.
Okay. So there was a yesterday I sent around an email with a draft scope of work for the climate action plan, which is a mayor and council agenda item. It's not a TSRS item. So the mayor and council have directed city staff to evaluate this and develop an understanding and tell them, hey, what would be the effect if something was to happen? So Angel put together the first draft for us, and there will be further revisions and reviews, I'm sure, because this is the way things work. And this provides a good view into what is actually being requested, what the deliverable will be. And you can see that the deliverables are down there in "We want a report." So you get down to page 3 and you see the deliverable section. And we want a report which will help outline the impacts of what happens if we do this divestment. And within there, there is discussion about what is the impact from a fiduciary perspective, so we don't ever skip over or miss the obligations of this board and what we're trying to accomplish in getting the plan fully funded and stable and consistently managed. I will pause here to see if there are any questions or comments, or if Angel would like to fill in any of the many blanks that I have left.
Not too many blanks, fortunately. If we, under the project objectives, I made sure to add that the consultant identified divestment opportunities that would reduce both financial risk and meet fiduciary duties. Under the, what's this one? Under the scope of service, we also have included here that the consultant will provide sample policy language for the fiduciary duty compliance and stakeholder communication. So I tried from the, I believe it was the July meeting, I remember Cassie talking about our fiduciary responsibilities and also one of the board members talking about financial risk. So I made sure to include language that would help us feel a little more comfortable that we will not be, that this policy and what the city is looking to achieve from this action and what the city is looking to achieve from it would not hinder us in on any side of the conversation.
And Mr. Chair, I looked briefly at the scope of work, and I think it's put together really well, and it gives me a much better picture of what the city is looking at, so I appreciate seeing the scope of work. I don't know exactly what the ask is for TSRS, but my question is whether the city is open to or perhaps looking for input from the board from the unique perspective of the fiduciaries, because I think that if I could work with Craig, we would probably make some recommendations for modifications in terms of the vendor's qualifications and the perspective and experience that that person would bring to this project if it's going to focus specifically on pension and retirement assets.
So, Cassie, maybe to that point, I actually ran this by the folks that do this on our side.
Okay.
The based on the scope of work and what's being requested, this isn't even something that we can do, to be honest. You're probably looking at an asset manager, not a consultant, to do this level of work for you. So, I mean, I think that's a good point, Cassie, in terms of what the ask is and who you want to have, you know, doing this for you. I'm not sure other firms can do the level of detail that's being asked. Maybe they can.
Okay. Is there action on this, or this is discussion at this point?
This is discussion at this point. There was no action item requested. Do have a couple of things here that I wanted to point out, which is, and I think I've said this before, the board has been here before. Mayor and council did issue a directive that we should not invest in any companies which were participating in the construction of the border wall from a prior administration. And that's still in force. In fact, you know, that was written as an ordinance, so it didn't fade away. And there's also state law which requires that we not engage in any divestment from Israel. So, you know, this kind of thing, it's not that the board hasn't seen it before. You know, it does happen periodically. And the last thing is there is, I don't know that it's board action, but certainly board information, which is that because this is affecting the investment policy potentially, I thought it was appropriate for the TSRS budget to assist in funding this analysis. So, Bunchell, I think that we've discussed this before, but I'm not quite sure. So I'm not so sure looking at your face now, you seem a little, but anyway, we don't know if we have to discuss it.
Permit me, thanks. Permit me to go back to the vendor qualification. Would you like to speak, Pete, on the selection of the vendor?
So put it up on the screen?
If you like, what I was kind of leading to was the fact that we, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, have already selected PFM, who is the city's investment manager.
No, we have not. At least I have not. It's possible that communication happened outside of me as I am transitioning out. Things do happen outside of me, but I had preliminary discussions with PFM and with Callan saying, hey, could you do this? Would it be possible? And PFM said, absolutely. And Callan said, tell us more information so that we can get you a appropriate answer.
So this means that we would make, once the draft has been finalized, does this mean that we would make the scope of work available to the two vendors to see what they come back with? Is that the intent? So at least I could follow up on things.
Yes. So my intent was to then discuss it with both vendors. And so, yeah, short answer, yes.
One one question. Was the intent to bid this to multiple people? And so we can kind of see if they need to have subs for the climate piece of it, or if they could do it all in-house or not.
I know we have a short turnaround time to get the final work before mayor and council. At least that's my understanding. And if you notice, the timeline within the scope is about 12 weeks. So I do not know that we have much latitude in terms of putting this thing out and waiting and dealing with vendors bidding or interest. Pete, as he indicated, has spoken to Colin and who is the consultant for the TSRS, and also PFM, who is the investment manager for the city.
I'm not familiar with PFM, but I know that the scope of work does reference experience with pension funds. I do think it's important if we're also looking at the supplemental retirement benefits, which I assume is the 457 plan, that is a bit of a different animal from an investment standpoint. So I don't know if that's been discussed with both vendors, that there's two different types of retirement programs operated by the city.
Pete, I know at our initial meeting on this topic, we talked about the 457, and our concern was that the city has no funds within that program, and as such, I do not know that the city can dictate how the investments are managed. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You're exactly right. The 457 program seems different in the scope of responsibility as the plan sponsor, but that's a whole different board, and you are also on that board, and that meeting is coming up in another 2 months, month and a half now. And so there will be opportunity to get them up to speed. They are aware that this same concept is out there, and we had discussed how a approach to that would be informational rather than prescriptive. So we can inform people as investors, this is the environmental rating of a particular fund or asset, and then allow the investor to use that as they wish.
Okay. Where are we on this then? I tend to like action items because I understand that. Kimberly, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I just had a comment or a question for Pete, because he mentioned that there's city code out there for the border wall in Israel. And do we follow that so we don't invest, or did we say that, you know, did we follow that or not, I guess, you know, because
yes.
We did. Okay.
Yes.
So this is a much bigger, there's a lot more involved with this, because there's, you know, fossil fuels and things like that. So it'll be interesting how it plays out. Okay. Thank you.
But defining who built the border wall was a unique complication, because it is not something which is universally understood in the investing world.
Right.
I was just surprised, you know, when you said that. You know, I mean, it seems so specific, so political, but that's the nature of this, you know, relations, you know. Thank you.
And I do see that in the deliverables, it does mention summary findings for trustees. So I assume that at the end of this project, the board will have an opportunity to participate in the conversation about recommended changes. Is that correct?
I did bring that up to the city CFO that before we take the recommendations to the mayor and council, that the draft report should be presented to the boards. I do not know. A decision has not been made on that, but that was my recommendation.
Yeah, and I think just procedurally, under city code, the board handles investments for TSRS. So if this report results in recommendations for changes, which I imagine it will, I don't think that it could be implemented without the board's involvement.
So, Cassie, are you referencing the code section that says changes to Section 22 of the code, which involves the board's obligations and oversight of investments, goes through the board for a comment period?
Well, I'm thinking more specifically that investments are delegated to the board to handle. So, okay. You know, obviously the mayor and council can provide law that the board's going to follow, right? But I think it's just this process may go more smoothly if the board is involved in the recommendations and has an opportunity to comment if there are concerns about any of the recommendations before they become a mandate.
Okay. If there's nothing else on this topic, budget versus actual, Pete?
Absolutely. So there is a
Apologize. Pete, before you move on, let me just say that the first paragraph, we will strike out the definitions of the fossil fuel and the environmentally irresponsible organizations. We will leave that up to the vendor.
Okay, so there is a very short budget versus actual report at the end of the packet of materials. We're only a few months into FY26, so the information which is provided is once again showing that there are some oddities in the way our accounting system reports things, and we'll work with our budget folks in order to get those little kinks smoothed out so that, for example, the contributions show up under the same program code as the budget for contributions. So right now we have $9 million coming in under normal retiree benefits, but we budgeted $62 million under actual contributions. So. Yeah, we're anticipating that money. We just need to align our recording of the money in the right place. As you look under the expenditure section, there is a little bit of misalignment again, but other than alignment of those things, the numbers themselves are on track and as we expect.
Okay, any questions about that? All right, any other items? It looks like the agenda is complete. Any other items? Okay, before I entertain a motion to adjourn, I want to again thank Pete for his service to us. We appreciate you, and we appreciate what you have done for us. In particular, I appreciate that you stepped in on relatively short notice when you took over for Art. And I guess in the one might say one good turn deserves another. Just kidding. Welcome, Lisa, again. We look forward to seeing you in October. Recall, everybody, that the October meeting is in person. It is at... Correct me if I'm wrong, it is at City Hall. It is not. It is at the...
It's at the fire, at the main fire station over
Like off of Cushing?
Yes, off of Cushing. So I'm sorry, I don't have, let me see. Do I have it?
I believe it's called 300 Fire Central Station Way.
Yes, Fire Central.
Across from the Museum of Art, if I read. No, it's not.
No, it's not by the
TCC. I'm going to be quiet. Yeah.
Right. It is Fire Central 3. Oh, I don't even have the addresses on here yet.
300 South Fire Central Place.
Yeah.
It's across the street from the Double Tree, but a little bit west, correct?
Yes. And parking will be at the TCC right across the street.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. The parking is free there.
And there will be always good to know where you're going. We look forward to seeing everybody there and that retreat. And I'm mentioning some of this because I am not sure, other than John, who's on his second tour of duty, has anybody on the board been at a retreat yet?
Negative.
I had that feeling this was new to all of you. All right. If anybody's got particular dietary issues, please get them transmitted promptly.
Yes, please email us.
Yeah. And the retreat typically runs from whatever time we're starting. And usually we're done around 3:30, 4 o'clock. Is that a fair memory, Pete?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we welcome all of you. This is a chance to spend time together, to delve more deeply, and to deal with some issues that are not always optimal for a Thursday morning meeting where everybody's got things they got to do when they're done. So we will see you all next month in person. And with that, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Pete, please call the vote.
All right. Kimberly Swanberg.
Aye.
John O'Hare.
Aye.
Tarleton Farron.
Aye.
Angelo Zamello.
Aye.
David Samer.
Aye.
Mark Rubin.
Aye. All right, everybody. Take care. We'll see you next month. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
So 10 o'clock, right on the button.
Like you were in a daze there. I thought they were.
I'm sorry.
It looked like you were in a daze just looking out the window.
It's because I'm tired. We got to take a go to some sort of class that teaches you how to sleep. Yeah.